Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is the last day of January, Anno Domini 2015, which means we only have about 3.5 months before it warms up. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. The Federal Communications Commission, God bless them, just took a bold step and redefined broadband as 25 megabytes for download streams and 3 megabytes for upstream speeds, and a move which is a move that the FCC chairman Tom Wheeler had hinted at earlier this month in a speech at International CES. The definition is a huge jump from the previous definition of broadband as 4 megabits downstream and 1 megabit upstream, which was the old standard implemented in 2010. For a measure of how bold this is, consider that the previous standard was only changed in 2008 to define broadband as 786K down from dial-up speeds of 200K down at a time when people were already using services such as Skype. So, until this move, the definition of broadband usually lagged the actual broadband speeds that the majority of customers were actually offered in the country. But according to the FCC, about 20% of the country can't access speeds that meet the new definition, which is why this is so notable. The FCC's definition is important because it determines what the FCC can say about the status of the country's broadband in the agency's broadband progress report. If the agency doesn't decide that the country is deploying broadband in a reasonable and timely manner, it could take action of some sort. That action might include gathering more data on why places don't have broadband, or could include programs to increase broadband. The rules are most likely to cause problems for DSL providers, notably AT&T, Verizon, smaller companies such as Windstream, CenturyLink, Fairpoint, Frontier, which have miles-old copper wires that will now need some kind of upgrade to provide 25-megabyte services to the home. The FCC's efforts to promote faster broadband are clearly troubling the industry. However, having a government agency push the industry to keep investing in expanding faster broadband, especially as telecommunications firms seem to abandon their investment in areas where DSL and copper lines are laid, seems prudent, lest we relegate entire swaths of the country to slow or non-existent broadband while the rest of us go on to gigabit futures. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is how fast is your broadband access at home? And your choices are 4 megabits or less, 4.1 to 20 megabits per second, 20.1 to 50 megabits per second, 50.1 to 100 megabits per second, and over 100 megabits per second. So far, we've got 30 people who have voted. The winner is, in fact, the top two are 4.1 to 20 megabits per second and 4 megabits per second or less, which means that by the new definitions, you people do not, in fact, have broadband.
Yeah, even Roadrunner Standard is 10. You have to get Turbo Boost to get higher than that.
What that means, if they want to call it broadband, they have to be at 25 megabits or better. So I don't know what Frontier is going to do with DSL.
Yeah, which is barely 6 to 8 if you're lucky.
If you're lucky. Yeah. And
so we need another word. It's faster than a modem, but less than broadband.
Well, I'm sure. Medium band? Yeah. Yeah. Sort of pokey band or so. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure that their PR people are working on that right now to
basic
come up
band.
With a basic band, there you go. Basic internet service, but not actually in any way, shape, or form broadband. And this comes at a time when...
And even, well, both Frontier, Time Warner here in Rochester, they have 1 megabit plans that are $15 a month that a lot of seniors and low-income people get because it's faster than a modem. But it's right. 1 megabit. That's barely faster than what year did you say the 768 went?
Yes, yes, 2008.
2008. So, yeah, we got 2008 internet here.
Yes.
But it's faster than a modem.
Well, and that's fine for some people. There are people who rarely do anything but check their email and maybe do a little light browsing. And for those people, 1 megabit is actually fine. And this isn't actually about how fast your internet provider what speed your internet provider gives you. It's about what they call it.
Yeah.
Nobody in the government is saying you can't give somebody a megabit. You just can't call it broadband.
Right. And we hear a lot from our customers, you know, I only do some basic web surfing and email and stuff. And then we find out that basic web surfing means watching videos on YouTube and FaceTime. That is basic, but that needs higher internet.
Well, exactly. And that's the big thing. Skype and FaceTime and Google Hangouts are becoming so common nowadays. That's great, but the problem is you end up with needing a lot of speed, which people just aren't getting.
Yeah, even two-way video chat with Skype and FaceTime is not that common, not that popular these days because internet speeds are so slow. And right. and then you look at something like Google Hangout, where you can do 10 video people, you plus 9 others. You need really fast. That's where we need that gigabit.
That's exactly it.
Which, and surprisingly, Google offers in some cities. Yeah.
Unbelievable, isn't it? All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Al from Greece, New York. Welcome, Al. What's up?
It's me again.
It is you again.
I took your advice from last week for Windows 10, and it didn't work.
It did. I forget what last week was. I apologize.
I was the one who called about the video games, of how they worked on XP, but didn't work for the newer ones.
Oh, and Dave was talking about the compatibility mode.
Yes, and I promised I'd call back, and I did. And unfortunately, I'm just sticking with XP.
Well, no, you know what? If XP is the only thing that works for you, then it's the only thing that works for you. And as long as you're aware that you don't get any support and... Don't go on the internet. You should be fine.
Desktop PC. I don't have internet on that.
Yep.
Yeah, then you're fine.
Exactly. As long as it's not broadband, I'm happy.
Yep. Now, refresh my memory. Did you try Windows 7?
Yes, I did.
Okay, because there are still places that you can... almost find Windows 7. Even though places are pushing 8, yeah, we still got PCs that come with 7.
Right. Well, I'm sorry it didn't work for you. I don't know what to tell. And there are no upgrades to those games?
No, unfortunately, no.
Yeah.
There are emulators. I just read about one for the Mac that runs in a browser, and you can run all your 1980s games.
Nice.
Because
80s. Well, yeah, because a lot of those early games from the early 80s and 90s, it doesn't matter that you're running it in an emulator in a browser on a modern computer, because the modern computers are so much faster that even the emulator is so much faster than a 1980 computer was.
Well, that is true.
Yeah. What was it? Oregon Trail, which was a hugely popular game.
I find it popular, too.
Yeah, somebody made a web version of it.
I have no idea how many times I died of dysentery. I can't.
What happened when you played Oregon Trail?
Did we talk about the XP mode installer for Microsoft?
Of course, why not?
Did we?
Wait a minute. No, we didn't.
Okay, there is an XP mode for Windows 8, but you have to have... Windows 7, you had to have... Hi. For Windows 7, you had to have Professional. It's not supported, but you clearly don't care about that. But you need Windows 8, and there is an installer file.
I've been to these links before, so I think we have talked about it at least once.
Okay.
I'll post them again so they go to the top of the list.
Right. But there, we will post how to get XP mode working on Windows 8. Now, will that in fact run the programs you want to run? I don't know. But it's a start.
Okay, so it will give me an idea, but it will not be for sure.
Well, I can't promise. I don't even know what
I didn't say you needed to promise. Yeah.
But it'll work. You get essentially an XP image that runs in a virtual machine, sort of ish, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah, that really is what happens.
Okay.
And so you create a virtual machine, and then you run it as a virtual machine. There's instructions that will tell you how to do this, but you can give it a certain amount of memory. You can give it a certain amount of disk space, and you should pay strict attention. You can change it later, but you should pay strict attention to what your games need.
Before
you...
Which I do. I read the manuals.
Perfect. Then you'll know how big... how much RAM you need, how much disk space you need, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, I do for every game. I check, so I know how much.
Good. So, you know, set it to the biggest one. Probably a 10-gig hard drive is more than enough. And if you've got a large enough machine with enough RAM, maybe multiple processors and lots of disk space, you should be able to run it fine. Turn it off when you're not playing the games. Turn it on when you are playing the games. You're on your way.
Because the stock Windows XP machine was probably a Pentium at 1 gigahertz.
Exactly.
So now on our quad i5 with, 12-core processor, it's screaming.
It's screaming along, exactly.
We've actually had people that have wanted us to slow down their emulator because it's too fast.
And yet I haven't even heard it scream yet.
Yeah. Anyway, take a look at those links. Steve will have them up in just a minute,
Some of them go back for years too. There's one here from Microsoft and from 2012.
For eight?
Will those be up tonight? Because I don't get home until about 8.
Oh yeah, they'll be up later tonight.
Oh, that's good.
They'll be up later this hour.
All righty then.
All righty, thanks.
Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Good
have
luck.
A good day.
Let us know.
Will do. Bye bye.
There was a Joy of Tech comic. In the last couple of days, someone got a new. Today's one's good. You know, the difference between Boston and Cupertino in weather. Boston, it's screaming snow, and Cupertino, it's raining money, which is a later news story. There was one a couple of days ago where a guy got a new new workstation, and he's got a 12 core, 64 gigs of RAM, and 3 4K monitors. And he said, "Oh, 3D modeling must be great," or you know, high res graphics. Oh, cool. And so then meanwhile, the guy, oh wow, Mashable really loads fast, and you know, Twitter is just rendering ridiculous on this command. Yeah, so $15,000 for a high end video workstation, and let's run Twitter on it.
Right. Good for him.
Yeah.
Our next caller is, I think it's Ed from Ithaca. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi. I wanted to find out how to reinstall or allow JavaScript on Firefox.
Well, there's two halves of it. One, you have to enable it in the Firefox preferences, or what are they called? Is it preferences or options in Firefox? I never remember.
Yeah.
And then it might be an add-on, too. Then there's an option where you can set what websites are allowed to use JavaScript.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the problems is that JavaScript is used by ads all over the internet to make, you know, the dancing monkeys when you go to a website.
That's why I deleted it.
Yeah, and so a lot of people don't run it, or they run a program like NoScript, which will stop JavaScript from running on certain websites, but allow it on other websites you choose.
Huh.
And we are just frantically scanning our Firefox
preferences. Well, I got it.
To enable
it for Firefox, click the Tools drop-down menu.
Yep.
Select Options.
I'm there.
Check the boxes next to Block Pop-Up Windows. Load Images Automatically. And Enable JavaScript. So you're blocking pop-ups, you're letting images load, and you're loading JavaScript.
All I have the Block Pop-Up Windows, and that's checked. Then under that, it's Fonts and Colors and Languages. It doesn't have those other things.
Are you a Mac or Windows?
A Windows 7.
Because that's the same thing I've got on my Mac. There's no JavaScript option.
Well, did you?
JavaScript is built in.
Is built in
to the browser. The Java can be installed, but JavaScript is built in.
Oh.
Okay, so you don't actually have an option to enable it. Well, that's interesting. You've got. Hold on. Let me think for a second. That's JavaScript after, I think it's 23. Okay, do this. In the address bar where you would normally type soundbites.org,
right.
Type about:config. press enter, it'll say, you really don't want to go here, and you'll click, I'll be careful, I promise.
Okay, let me do that. About
colon config, no spaces.
Okay.
C-O-N-F-I-G.
Address is invalid.
About colon, and the about the colon, and the word config with no spaces.
Oh, no spaces between colon and...
No spaces.
I like that. I'll be careful, I promise.
Yeah.
Yes, I got it.
Okay, so click I'll be careful, I promise, even though I know you won't. In the search bar, which is not which is not the same thing as the address bar, right?
I see
it's
it.
Next to it. Type javascript.enabled. Again, no space.
javascript.enabled. .enabled. Okay.
Hit enter.
I see it. It has default Boolean true.
And so it should be running JavaScript. Mine says false.
Interesting.
I didn't know I turned mine off.
And yours says true.
Yeah.
It says true.
Well, harumph. I say harumph.
Well, turn it off and turn it back on. Try that. Well, turn it off, relaunch Firefox, and turn it back on.
Right. Do you have no script already loaded?
I do.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Then what you need to do is turn off NoScript.
Or in the NoScript preferences, allow the website that you want to use scripting.
Yeah, just allow the one website.
Oh, okay. Okay, because I was trying to get on the internet, and it needed to at a different place, and it needed JavaScript on to.
In order to sign in to yeah.
So in that NoScript settings, I'm trying to find a picture of that too. There should be an option to allow JavaScript on this site.
Right, and the NoScript should have an icon up in the bar, right?
It does.
Yeah, you should be able to on that site click the NoScript icon, and then you either have it right there and it says allow on this site or
allow globally, parentheses, dangerous.
Dangerous, yeah, don't do that. But underneath that, it should say allow whatever site you're on.
Okay.
And then you can just click that, and that's that then keeps NoScript running for every place else, but lets it run where you need it to log in. And you may have to refresh, but once you do that, you should be fine.
Okay, excellent.
There you go.
Thank you. For some reason... The when I was trying to do this, it would not. It only went to Firefox. It would not allow me to enter through IE, in which I do have JavaScript.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's usually the opposite. Some websites code for IE, and then it won't work in other browsers. Hmm. It's we politely say that's lazy programmers.
Right.
Could it be because Firefox is my default browser?
Well, it could be, but there's a million reasons that it could be, honestly.
Right. Okay, well, thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of moments with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 22 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, rocking out right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 27 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Paul from Brighton, New York on the line. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
Before I get to my question, one of your callers just earlier was mentioning Windows 10. Did he say he was running Windows 10?
You can download that was probably Al because he said he was going to install
technical preview. They call it.
Yeah, it's a technical preview. You can download it from Microsoft. It is not supported
so it's a
in
beta.
Any
it's,
way.
It's pre-alpha. Not even beta.
Yeah, basically, it is guaranteed to fail in some spectacular way and may take your machine with it. But if you want to play with it, you're absolutely welcome to. Microsoft would be happy to let you.
Okay, maybe I'll skip that for the present.
Yeah, maybe you should.
You have an extra hard drive and don't to play it, install it on and play with. It can be interesting, but it will die.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, my question is, on a few sites that I go on the internet with, when I'm looking at an article, like on the Wall Street Journal, perhaps the New York Times, or one of the other online publications, as I scroll down the article to somewhere in the middle or near the bottom, and after reading it for a while, it'll suddenly pop up. The cursor will pop up to the top of the column, and that happens fairly sporadically. Can you? And I use my browser is Firefox. Can you explain that?
Do you have a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
There are a couple of things that can cause that, most of them at the other end.
Okay.
What sometimes happens is they've put some sort of script into their page, which as you reach the bottom of the page, what it's supposed to do is pop up a thing that essentially says, if you love this story, then you can join and get more in your mailbox or whatever they send you. If you've got some sort of script blocker or they just screwed up.
I'm a subscriber, a paid subscriber to many of these publications.
Okay.
It's probably an ad refreshing at the top.
Yeah, it's an ad refreshing at the top then. If for example, what I tend to do, and I'm doing it automatically now, is whenever I go to page, I click somewhere in the blank section of the page itself, which takes the focus off of the ads at the top, and that happens less to me.
Does the Windows browsers have Apple calls it a reader view, which strips out all the ads and shows you just the article, and I'm sure the web publishers hate that, but it's really, really good on Safari browser. That way you don't get any of those ads, you don't see any of that jumping monkeys, and it doesn't bounce you around because it's just the straight text of the article you're trying to read.
Right.
Yeah.
But that, I don't really know that.
Okay. Maybe a note or something, email to the publisher about this might bring some answers.
You could try a different browser, see if it behaves differently. As we mentioned earlier, a lot of websites, assume Internet Explorer, and when you're running something else, sometimes things, are unexpected. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good answer. Thank you.
Sure.
Yep. And for Firefox, there's clearly...
it's probably an add-on that does it.
Yeah, there's an add-on called Cleary and another one called Readability. There's one called Reader for Firefox. The same concept exists. They just didn't build it into the browser yet. I'm sure they will at some point in the future. They just haven't yet. I spend a lot of time browsing through the add-ons and things because there's always something cool there that I'm interested in.
And then you get so many add-ons loaded that the browser gets really slow.
Well, exactly. You got to be careful what you load in.
Yep.
One of my favorites, which was... Radionomy, I believe it was called. Radio Player Live is the new name. Was the new name. It's gone from the store. So I just set up a new thing and I can't load it. It let me set up radio stations and play them through the browser. So I could start up my Chromebook, click on that and be listening to Jazz 90.1 almost immediately as I work. There are others that do it too, but I really like that one.
TuneIn Radio has almost taken the place of that too.
Yep, TuneIn Radio is
iHeartRadio. Depends on which network you're listening to, and most people don't even know what radio network they're on.
Right. We prefer TuneIn Radio.
Yes, because we're on TuneIn Radio.
Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hello again. I called you last week, and I was telling you about Comcast and what services my brother had and how he can access it. And I told you I was going to have to do the dance with Time Warner again because my bill was renewing. And I got a thing in the mail, and they were only going to increase my bill by $25.
Wow.
But and that was keeping what I had. I had a free trial of Stars for a year, and then they included that with equipment and fees. They were only going to increase me about, like, oh, it was more like between $25 and $30.
Right.
But it was more than what my wife and I can handle right now. We own our own business, and we're struggling, and
sure.
I've had health issues for the past couple years, and not working as much as I should be. And I went there today to return some equipment. I was returning a cable box that was in the bedroom, which was going to save me $8 a month.
There you go.
And I was also getting a sheet on what modems they want, because I was thinking about getting rid of that and saving another almost $20 by the time I bought my own equipment. So the girl would not let me return the equipment, and I had just turned Stars off when I paid the bill because that was recycling. And she goes, oh, no, no, no. So she offered me everything under the sun, whole home, everything, what I had, plus more speed, for the same price that the bill just was. And I said, that's lovely. I'd love to take it, but I can't afford what I've got.
Right. Yeah.
Well, she did a dance for 20 minutes on that keyboard, and she renegotiated me back to what I was paying 2 years ago.
Wow, nice.
And
nice.
Gave me Stars back and gave me my cable box for free that was in the bedroom.
Nice.
Wow. So sometimes just takes persistence.
I'm going to tell everybody out there, don't talk to them on the phone. If you can go to the cable store, go to the cable store and be as nice as you can be to them. And if you get the right person, they're going to do... you know, something for you. She searched for deals for 20 minutes, and she found me something.
Yep. It's harder.
Wow.
This is a fact of life. It's harder to say no when they're looking you in the eye.
Exactly.
And that's absolutely true. Good tip. Thanks,
Mark.
So
I wanted to just pass that along to all the great listeners that listen to this show.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You know, oh, and by the way, their standard speed is not 10. It's 15.
Yeah, I just noticed that. It's up to 15 now.
It's 15. That's what I have. And it works great with Netflix and Hulu.
Yep.
Yeah, it does.
It does. It works great, you know, but at that speed, if you got anybody else doing too much more than one more thing, like if my son's on YouTube and I'm on Netflix, we're okay. But if my daughter gets on her tablet and starts YouTube, we're done.
Yep.
We're done.
I'm on Time Warner's website looking at their packages, and they have a package that has more stuff that I'm getting for half the price I'm currently paying.
Yep.
So I really have to go down there and
down
talk to them.
The store and yeah. Work with them. You might get more services for the same price or what you've got for a less price.
Yep.
Yep, absolutely.
So, just wanted to pass that on to you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I love to hear that. That's great.
And that and other tips will probably be revealed at the Apple Cider meeting in 2 weeks. Phil Dampier from Stop the Cap is going to be speaking about cutting the cable TV cord, doing more over the internet, how to get a better deal out of Time Warner. And that should be very interesting. So that's at applecider.org. And it will be, the second Tuesday of February at East High School. And I don't have a calendar handy, and my calendar hasn't loaded yet. Here we are. It's February 11th. So it's actually next week, week after next, February 11th, East High, 7 o'clock. Phil Dampier from Stop the Cap will be talking about cutting the cable TV cord and cutting down your cable. In fact, he's got an article this morning that Time Warner has said that they will go to the 100 megabit max. In 75% of its markets by next year, if the Comcast merger dies.
Interesting.
Which is another story you've got later on.
Which is another story I've got as well. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Julian from Greece, New York. Welcome, Julian. What's up?
Hi. I have a pop-up. Just came on my screen. An Apple software update. iTunes is now a fully 64-bit application and a 64-bit editions of Windows 8.7 and Vista. Do I want to update that?
What does the icon look like that's showing you that window?
It's a blue circle, and then it has these blue arrows.
Swoopy things around it?
Yes.
Yeah, that is the legitimate Apple software update icon, so that is safe.
Even though I'm on my computer has Windows 7.
Did it say 8.7 or did it say 8/7?
8.7.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's safe then.
Yeah, because 8.7 doesn't exist. But
okay. All right.
So you're very good to question those pop-ups.
Good for you.
Because a lot of them are fake, and they'll try to trick you into installing bad software by claiming it's something else.
Exactly.
So knowing what the actual icon looks like to make sure that's the real icon. And we always joke, is if bad guys take another 10 minutes and use the real icon,
right.
then they could trick more people, but they don't.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yep. That's probably illegal.
Yeah. Well, and that's just right.
Yeah, Apple that would be copyright infringement.
It would be copyright infringement. So instead, they know Apple would go after them hard.
Yeah. Yep. So when Windows becomes Windows 10,
yeah.
and I'm still on Windows 7,
yeah.
do I update that?
Theoretically, for the first year, anyone who has 7 and 8 will get 10 for free.
Okay.
And so I would wait a month or two.
Yep.
And
wait for 10.1.
Let it all settle down a little bit.
Yeah.
But keep track so that you don't miss it.
Okay. That's good.
Yep. And then the other half of that is, does your computer have enough oomph in it? Enough memory, enough processor? Generally speaking, the new OS will require more than the old OS did.
Okay.
And so we're seeing a lot of people that had 4 gigs of RAM with Windows 7, and then on the Mac with 10.9, 4 gigs of RAM was fine, but then you upgrade to the latest OS, and 4 gigs isn't fine anymore. You should really have 8.
Okay. Right.
And so that can end up trickling into other issues.
How do I find out what RAMs I've got now?
If you right-click on My Computer and choose Properties.
Okay.
It will tell you whether you're running 32-bit or 64-bit, and also tell you what your RAM and processor is.
Okay, good. All right, thank you.
Yep.
All right, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Have a good day. Bye.
You too.
And on the Mac, if you go to the Apple menu and choose About This Mac, it also tells you your system version, your RAM, and your processor speed.
Right.
But it's Apple and Microsoft sort of run into the same problems. They make a new OS for the hardware that's out now, and they'll make it backward compatible to machines from a few years ago. But Apple is a little more strict about cutting off older machines that are abysmally slow. Microsoft has sort of tended to just let it run and let people complain about it. But if you have a machine that's more than 2 or 3, 4 years old, you may not want to run the new OS because it's going to be slower than your current OS unless you upgrade the RAM. Because very few computers can upgrade the processor.
Right.
Often that requires a new motherboard, which you just get a new computer. But a lot of machines can upgrade the RAM. But we are seeing now that the netbooks and the Ultra laptops, the MacBook Air on the Mac side and the Ultra laptops on the Windows side, a lot of those you cannot upgrade the RAM. Part of the way they're making them so cheap is just soldering everything to the motherboard, and so that cannot be upgraded later. So it's becoming more of a commodity item. Of course, for $250, your Chromebook wears out in a couple of years. You buy a new one with twice the specs.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. You know, I've got 3 Chromebooks. They all cost me the same amount of money, and each one has been progressively better.
Yep.
You know,
we've kind of seen that in the computer world. That $1,000 barrier hasn't really been breached very well.
Right.
But for that $1,000 over the years, you're getting a whole much better machine.
Right. In this case, it's $250, but. It means that, as I've said, I can do 90% of what I need to do, 99% of what I need to do on my Chromebook, and I've got a desktop for the rest. All right, we're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 41 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on the solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 46 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Harry from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Harry. What's up?
Oh, hi. I've got an XP machine that I have offline, and I use it to store my old radio shows on and add MP3 disc to it, and I've got a blue screen, and I've got an error, and that occurred when I was trying to make copies of those discs, and it's the error is unmountable boot volume.
Ooh.
And when I turn the machine on, I get a black screen and a list of choices to reboot, including start normally and safe mode. None of them work, and then I wind up with the blue screen and the unmountable boot volume. And I check the Microsoft site on how to fix it, and it requires me to stick my old disk in the drive and make a choice indicated by R. And, of course, the drives don't work, and I tried an external drive hookup.
Yeah, it basically means that your internal hard drive is hosed.
Oh, boy.
You may be able to, well, you have two choices. You can try to repair the damage, or you can erase the hard drive and start over.
Right.
Which is what the Microsoft's instructions were basically telling you to do.
Oh.
So there's a magic program called SpinRite. And what it can do is scan your hard drive, and it looks at all the blocks on the drive and can often bring them back. It actually, just read an interesting history about it. It started out in the early days when we had to change the interleave on our hard drives from, 3:1 to 4:1 to 1:1. And because he was moving data on the hard drive, he wrote these routines to make really, really, really sure the data was being read and written properly. And so now we don't need to interleave anymore, but this program can make really, really, really sure the data is read and written properly,
right.
which has the side effect of repairing damaged drives. So that can possibly repair the damage and get your data back if you don't have a backup.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of backups, but I also have... I like to use the machine because it has two DVD drives for making copies,
mm-hmm.
and those things won't turn at all. And how do I get SpinRite disk, and will it work with a external drive?
Yeah, you would download it on another computer, and then there's instructions with it to either create a bootable CD or a bootable flash drive.
Okay.
It actually it still fits on a floppy disk, so you can make it if your machine has a floppy drive.
I have an external floppy drive,
yep.
too.
And then so you boot that SpinRite disk, and then it can... work on the hard drives in the computer.
Okay, that might be, I might learn something by doing all that.
Yep.
And on my 7 machine, I can go to the internet and look for Spin.
Yeah, SpinRite is the program, and grc.com is the company.
If you are a first-time buyer, it's $89.
And they have a full money-back guarantee if you're not satisfied or it doesn't work for you.
Okay, so I got to make a decision there.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Sadly, none of this is free. But if you already have, see, if your hard drive doesn't work and your optical drives don't spin,
that might be the power supply not giving enough power to the drives.
Yeah, I could take it to a shop and they could give me an evaluation on whether to fix it,
right,
or junk it,
right.
Well, sort of the evaluation right now is it's junk it as an XP machine. But if the data on it is important, then getting that data back becomes the actual question.
Right. Okay, right.
But
well,
you,
no, I've got a lot of backup.
If you've got backups, then your easiest bet, at least, would be to simply replace the machine.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you can start by erasing the hard drive and reinstalling the Windows from the disk again.
Well,
yeah, I've got a
you can
good
see if,
7
yeah.
machine.
Yeah. See if that
How
works.
How old is that machine, by the way?
The XP?
Yeah.
Oh, I got it in 2003, and it's been repaired a couple times, but
yeah. So it's a dozen years old, and it really owes you nothing. It's
right. It'd be better to get get the new stuff in a year.
Yep.
And I'm okay otherwise,
Yep, that's probably your best bet.
And just take out the hard drive and destroy it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
Now, one other thing is if you've got a little network at home, and what you really want to do is just have some place to store your MP3s, you might think about getting a drive that simply attaches to the network and all the other machines on your network can read it.
Uh-huh.
And that way you can write to it or read from it and play from any of the machines on your network, play your radio shows or whatever you've got.
I've got external drives with a lot of the MP3 stuff on it. But it was just handy to have that XP machine, you know.
Sure.
The two optical drives to copy discs.
Right. Yep. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, bye.
It is tough when people are looking at the end of life of those machines, because it never happens at a time that, you know, it's not like you just won the lottery and buying a new machine is easy.
So that's a big question we get in the shop all the time too. You know, do I spend $200-$400 on this machine, or do I buy a new machine? And that's very tough for some people.
Right.
And a lot of people, you know, I've got $200. I don't have enough to buy a new machine, but I've got $200. Well, it's not really worth putting money into the old machine.
Right.
I've only got $200.
Right. But then, you know, as your father would tell you, it's throwing good money after bad.
Right. So, and then what's going to break next, and where's the next $200?
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Linda from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda. What's up?
Hi. Got a question. I wrote it down so I wouldn't get it confused.
Okay.
I have got several laptops. They're all 15 inches. Well, my eyesight is going, so I got a new HP touchscreen with Windows 8 on it. Okay. My question is, first of all, it's got lifetime support from HP. If I go to Windows 10, would I lose the lifetime support because I'm upgrading it?
We don't know yet. That'll be up to HP when Windows 10 is officially announced.
Right.
At the moment, Microsoft will not support Windows 10. So, which means if you call them, they won't answer questions.
I've got Windows 8, but that's my question. Okay, why or why not should I, when it comes out, should I get Windows 10? Why or why not?
Well, you should get it because keeping the latest and newest is probably the best thing to do. But you should not if you lose that lifetime support.
Okay, I've got the two other laptops I've got. I want to sell them, but I'm not an eBay person. What can I do? One's Windows 7 with 500 gigs. The other one's Windows 8 with a terabyte on it. But, you know, I got this new one for Christmas.
Right. Right.
There are companies in town that will put it on eBay and Craigslist for you and then take a cut of the sale, or you can learn how to do it yourself.
I think one of those companies is Sun King in Brockport, as a matter of fact. I think they're one of those companies.
I think a lot of the FedEx and UPS stores will do that too, because they're used to shipping things out. So they want you to buy their shipping services to ship it to whoever it's going to, so they'll help you put it on the sales sites.
Yeah,
but a lot of times, just ask around. And
that's what my friend said. Put it on eBay.
Well, have her put it on eBay for you.
I don't trust eBay.
Well, there's this catch-22 that the buyers want to make sure they're getting something real. The sellers want to make sure that the buyers are real, because there's been fraud on both sides. So there are escrow companies in the middle where the buyer sends the money and the seller sends the thing, and the escrow company makes sure it's right, takes a cut, and then passes it along. But then you have to trust the escrow company.
So what is Windows 10 going to give me that, because I hate Windows 8, but I don't have a choice. What is Windows 10 going to give me that I'm going to like?
Well, one of the things that it gives you is you get your start button back.
Okay.
Which means that it'll be much more like Windows 7 than it will like Windows 8. And a lot of people like that idea.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's going to be newer and faster, and a lot of the things that they're never going to bother to fix on 7 or 8, they will fix in 10.
Yeah. Well, I've got a terabyte hard drive and eight gigs of RAM, and I've got a touchscreen on my new one. So what I got to do is, when Windows 10 finally comes out and all the bugs are worked out, I should call HP and find out if I lose my lifetime support then.
Exactly. Only they can tell you. I'm sorry. But, call them and ask them about that. It's likely that it'll be fine, but check with them.
Yeah. Okay. So when do you think Windows 10 will come out? Have any ideas?
For real. This fall, we're getting close to fall.
It's likely that it should come out in time for Christmas.
Okay. But you say wait a month or so.
Yeah. You know us. We believe in 10.1 more than 10.
Yeah. Let someone else figure out the problems.
I think I was telling you 2 weeks ago. I tried what you said, Steve, about the playlist. That is so confusing. You know, as I said to you 2 weeks ago, why oh why do they have to upgrade if it's not broken? You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree.
You have to make new people buy it.
Right.
But people like us who are not tech savvy don't understand it.
Yep, we're used to the way it worked.
Yep.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Linda.
And sort of in general, for anyone looking to upgrade their operating system, you should always check with the manufacturer of your hardware to make sure there's no driver compatibility issues. So if it's easiest if you have a name brand PC, so you can go to HP or Dell and look up your model number. But all the drivers would have to have compatibility checks. All your applications have to have compatibility checks. So it can be daunting to upgrade your OS. So
yeah.
don't jump right in on day one and then complain when it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You have to expect glitches. You have to. It's unrealistic not to. It's like buying a new car and then being upset that the radio controls aren't exactly like they were in the old car. Well, you just got a different car. Get over yourself.
So it'll take a while to learn the new way to do things, but it's very frustrating for that while when things are different. See, I wish that they would leave the old way to do stuff too. So yep. Add the new features, but leave the old features. But then no one would ever bother learning the new features.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, it really just becomes, mine needs to be shinier than yours. You know, when it was cars, it was chrome and fins. Now it's where are we going to put the start button and what are we going to do about this and that.
And then a few years later, it was no chrome and no fins. Oh, you still got fins on your car? How old?
Exactly. So then their Windows 8 comes out and now everybody's going, I really wanted my chrome and fins. I want my fins back. So 10
what
will
is
have
this?
The...
What is this start menu thing? I thought that was an entire page.
Yep. It's tough for these guys. Nobody wants to seem like they're old, you know, and if you have the same interface, it doesn't matter how good it is. It doesn't matter how easy it is to use. It doesn't matter how familiar millions upon millions of people are with it. If it's 10 years old, it's old and you don't want it on your operating system anymore.
That's why Windows XP still has a 25% market share.
Because people love
change.
What it has.
Yep, and you don't want to change to something that looks different.
That's exactly right. All right, that sound tells me you have wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this show. I don't know what you were thinking, but whatever it was, keep thinking it because we're going to be back for a whole nother hour on the other side of this slightly longer break. We have Steve Ray. We have Michael Oden. Dave Enright, clearly one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. And I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back shortly with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great, and pay attention when I say this, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites as we hurtle headlong into the second hour of Soundbites. Our next caller is Mike from Caledonia, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's up?
Hi, thanks. I have an APC DR800 battery backup that says I need a new battery, and it's also buzzing and making a lot of weird noises that I had to unplug it. I called APC and they said it could be relays, that I should probably replace the whole unit. Now, I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I was just wondering, my power supply, I think, is 250 watts and the monitor is a 45 watt continuous. And do you think I should go higher? I think the APC 800 is 600 watts.
Yeah.
But I was looking at CyberPower, and they have a 600 watt, an 810 watt, and a 900 watt. Do you think I should go up?
Well, I know APC has a calculator where you type in, you tell it what stuff you're using, and it gives you the best wattage range.
Right, but 800 should be more than enough for what you've got. You've got 450 and 45, so it's about 500 watts?
Well, no, it's 250 and 45. Well, I'm wondering if I ever decided to upgrade the computer. Usually, I only use the computer for internet. I used to use it for work, but I'm not working anymore. So I'm just wondering, you know, I can't imagine me going up and getting a much bigger computer, a much, much more powerful computer.
And well, the newer computers generally have lower wattage power supplies, too.
Right.
Oh, do they?
The big thing to me is the amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because if you get something that's just good enough, it's a few minutes.
Right.
If you get something that's much better, it's a little longer.
Right.
So my personal preference is a little bigger, a little longer.
But they also shut down automatically if you use their software, correct?
Right,
yes,
yeah.
You can, absolutely.
So the big question is, does the battery last 10 minutes or does it last an hour?
Right.
Right, and the basic idea is if it lasts an hour, most blackouts are not quite that long.
Hopefully, yeah.
Right. So your system never goes down.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
But the other thing is, how long have you had this APC?
Oh, it's been a while. This is the second battery. So it's been maybe 5-6 years.
Okay. So you're thinking it might actually just be time to replace the battery.
I'm thinking it might be time to replace the unit because of the buzzing. You know, they were saying, to me, it sounds like relays.
Oh, okay. It's not just the alarm. There's a buzzing going on inside as well.
Yeah, yeah. And it's loud enough that you can't do anything. You have to unplug it and shut it off.
Right.
I've always found that a little frustrating that a new battery is about half the cost of a new UPS.
Yeah, I know.
And the new UPS has more features. And
I just put a new battery in my APC, and I did something wrong. It won't stop screaming, so I had to take the battery back out. Yep. I don't know what I did. I'll figure it out later today.
Have you heard of CyberPower?
CyberPower?
Yeah.
No.
Another UPS manufacturer?
No.
Okay, because that's the one I was looking at. It's a nice-looking machine there. Not that nothing will be costing that much, but if the system goes down and doesn't back it up, they give you more money. You know, they'll give their insurance is more.
Huh.
So I was just wondering if you had ever heard of them. Because I've always had APC. But they're even a little cheaper than APC.
Oh, interesting.
Well, yeah, that's they know APC is the market leader, so you have to differentiate yourself somehow.
Right, right. And then
and that's CyberPower Systems, not CyberPowerPC.com.
It might be the same company. I don't know.
Right.
I also was looking online and saw that people were saying some power supplies need true sine wave. Some of the newer power supplies. Do you know anything about that?
Well, that tells you how pure the power really is.
And a lot of UPSs will have a function in it. I think APC calls theirs automatic voltage regulation, AVR.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, it draws in AC, converts it to DC to charge the battery, then converts it to AC, and you get a pure AC sine wave coming out of the unit. Because you're always running off the battery. So all the little fluctuations in the electrical feed never get to the computer.
Right.
That's the best kind of UPS to have, but they're a little more expensive than the regular
ones. Right. There's the kind that's always that the battery essentially sits off to the side.
Right.
And if there's a blackout, it pops in. And then there's the kind that's always loading itself up from the wall plug and always power. It's like a laptop.
Ah, okay.
Right, because the battery is always what's really powering your laptop, even when it's plugged in.
Right.
And that, as Steve said, that's the better one to have, because there's two kinds of things. There's power surges and power blackouts.
And brownouts.
But the big thing is the third one, which is brownouts.
Mm-hmm. Which is much more common.
Much more common, and it means there's just a little bit lower voltage.
Right.
You see it a lot in the summertime when everyone turns their air conditioner on and then your lights dim a bit.
Oh, yeah, I've noticed my lights dim.
Yeah. Yep, exactly right. And that will cause more damage to your power supply than anything else. So if you're constantly running off the battery, so the battery gets a little less power right now, so what?
Right.
It's still providing the right amount of power to the machine. So you want to get the inline, whether they call it inline or sine wave or some whatever they call it. Voltage regulator, whatever they call it. That's the one you want to get for your as a UPS.
Okay, okay. Yeah, so they are a little bit more money, but because I also read that APC doesn't support Macintosh computers anymore. My wife is getting into Macintosh computers.
Well, support is always that nebulous word. If you call them with a question, they won't answer your question. It works just fine on a Mac. Their software doesn't run on a Mac because the Mac has UPS software already built in, so you don't need any third-party software.
Uh-huh.
So you don't need to call them for questions. You just plug it in and it works.
Right. If something happens with the UPS itself and you call them up and they say, what have you got plugged into it, tell them it's a PC. What, are they going to come and arrest you?
It's a computer.
Right. It's a computer. Tell them it's a Chromebook. They don't care. What they care about is if you call up and say, oh, the software didn't shut down my machine correctly, then they say, what kind of machine you have? Well, we have a Mac. Well, we don't make software for that. We don't support that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they don't support it.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We tend... I don't like lying to people, but when the reason they don't support something is stupid...
Yeah.
Or unimportant because what's plugged into it is not important. What's important is there's smoke coming out of it.
Yeah.
You know, then you say what you got
to
say.
We've kind of, on the Mac side, learned that over the years, is that when you have to call tech support, you never say Mac. You know, I'm running a computer. You know, it's got 4 gigs of RAM. You know, it's if they ask you what OS, then you tell them. But it usually doesn't come down to that. But then I have to translate their Windows instructions to Mac.
I have called up in the past for several times back when I had Time Warner, and I would call them and say, I have no internet connection. And their first question is, what computer do you have? And I would say, how is that relevant?
Yeah. Well, they're trying to blame the computer, not the internet.
Right. How is that relevant? And they will say, well, it could be right. It could be the computer. Okay. I've got two PCs, a Chromebook, and a Mac plugged into it. All of them tell me there's no connection. Yeah. Oh, and all the lights are off on your freaking modem.
Yep.
So maybe it's the freaking modem. Okay. Sorry. I don't have to worry about that anymore. I have green light. I'm a happy man. It's all good. It's all great. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Oh, I wish I could say I was a happy man.
Well, have you signed up on their website?
No.
See? Don't forget.
I think this is headed to the shop, but I'm hoping that you guys can help me.
All right, go ahead.
I was shutting down the computer after doing some updates, and in the process of shutting down, that dock with the 6 plugs that goes into the 2 fell out of the wall.
Oops.
So I lost power.
Oh, that's bad.
That's, well, you tell me it's bad. Holy smokes. Obviously, I'm having problems getting into my computer.
Right.
It takes an hour and 6 minutes to get past the splash screen. When it does, an hour and 6 minutes to get to the splash screen. 6 minutes for the cursor flashing in the corner, and then it takes 12 minutes to start Windows, 2 minutes for the desktop to be displayed, and when it does, you can't do much with it.
Most people would have given up after the first 5 minutes.
It takes so long, but I was able to do a system restore to a previous version. That doesn't help. I've got changing the boot order, getting into the BIOS. I've gone into the, I have a Rampage 3, so you push delete, and then you wait your hour and 6 minutes or however long it is to get into the boot sequence. I've changed it so I can try to run my repair on my installation disk.
Yeah.
It's not taking. In other words, it looks like I'm doing everything properly, but when it boots up again, it boots up to the system. It doesn't boot up to the CD.
Wow.
That sounds like something is really messed up on your hard drive. If you're lucky...
Well, it's in your BIOS. I mean, if he can't even change the boot order... Are you in the BIOS where you're changing the boot order?
Yeah.
And it ignores you?
Well, it doesn't... I've done everything it says. I mean, basically, I changed the boot order, save and exit, the whole bit, but it never goes to the CD.
Does the CD light up when you turn the machine on?
Well, no, because I've got this... I get only a few steps into the... come on, you can say this. Into the boot sequence before it stops.
No. When you first turn the machine on, right, from cold off to on, the optical drive should flash.
Okay, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, check that, because if that's not happening, then there's no power to it. Basically, everything gives a quick little flash. If you've got five optical drives, you'll see it. Five flashes.
Okay.
And that tells you that at least what that's just a byproduct of the optical drive saying here I am and I've got power, but it's a nice little indication. So
I can do that right now. There's
well, if you don't see that, then there's an issue with the optical drive and power. If you do see that, then there's an issue with the optical drive and the BIOS. And if
I do see the light.
Okay. Then the problem is not the BIOS, is not the drive itself.
Right.
The problem, unless you're honestly not actually saving, that hitting that F10 to save an exit.
I mean, I've done it twice.
Yeah. Also, now, depending on what operating system you have.
The 7 Ultimate.
No. Excuse me. I didn't mean operating system. I meant BIOS. What BIOS you have, as it begins to boot, it's F2 or F8 or F12, I forget, that brings up a boot menu. Yeah.
Different for every BIOS.
And I can, I have been able to get into safe mode. But again, it takes...
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about before...
And I've been able to watch the screen, the boot screen.
Stop and listen. Before you actually even get to the operating system,
okay.
If you hit... It's almost always F2, but sometimes it's F8 or F12. Before it even boots, if you start whacking that F2 key, you might get, and it depends on the BIOS... could be F2, could be F8, could be F12, could be none of them.
Sometimes it says, press F whatever to get to the boot menu.
Right, and you get a boot menu which says hard drive, floppy drive, CD-ROM drive.
And that's a one-time boot rather than going into the BIOS and setting the order all the time.
Right, and so you may not be able to set it in the BIOS for some other reason that is not important to settle right now because we need to get this done. But if you can, in that... little boot menu,
right.
Say boot from the CD-ROM drive, and then you've got your disk in the CD-ROM, then you should be able to go from there.
It was F2, F10, F12.
F8.
I've seen some.
It could be
escape,
any of the
F9,
could be
yeah. anything on the top row, or delete, yep.
It could be anything, and if you've got a manual with your computer, which is so unlikely anymore.
No, I've got the manual.
Excellent. Check to see if there's a BIOS... boot sequence, a boot key, BIOS boot something.
So separate from the press F12 to get into the BIOS itself, there's sometimes a separate key to get to the boot menu directly.
Right.
Okay. I have to look through. I did look through the... I wanted to make sure... I mean, I've obviously gone in there before, but I said, okay, I've tried... The manual says delete. I've tried alt-delete, alt-tab, tab...
Yeah, try, I'm sorry, because there are so many BIOSes.
Oh, I understand.
But try, if you can't find it in the menu, just keep trying stuff.
Now, I did post a question to Tom's Hardware.
Yeah.
And their suggestion was try clearing the CMOS.
Yeah.
And I'm more of a software guy than a hardware guy.
Take the battery out for half an hour.
Yeah, that'll do it. They're also in the manual. It should tell you how to clear the BIOS.
Okay.
And if you can get into Windows safe mode or even command mode, I'd try running the system file checker. Because if it shuts off during a system update, that's probably the worst time it can do.
Yeah, I know.
So we're back to the earlier call about right. What do I do? Just erase it and start over, or try to get the data back?
Right.
I can't even erase it.
Right.
I have no problem. I keep my data on a separate hard drive. I don't keep it on the operating system drive. I have no problem at all just reinstalling the whole, but I can't get it to even read the CD.
Right. Well, try those things, and that's the best I can tell you. And if that doesn't work, you're probably going to have to take it to somebody.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but...
Not your fault.
Yeah, no, try those things.
It's the cats who were appropriately sworn at.
How far did they fly?
No. I was diving under the table. I didn't have time to chase the cats.
Right. And this is why you have an uninterruptible power supply.
Yep.
All right, we got to take a quick break.
All right.
Thanks. We are going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of moments with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour. I wish you could see. Oh, you can. No, you can't. Ustream is down. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Roger from Greece on the line. Welcome, Roger. What's up?
I have a PC with Windows Vista on it, and I'd like to upgrade this to a new machine. And I was just calling to see what your recommendation would be for me for, you know, the capacity that I should be looking for. Basically, what I do is I do email. I want to do word processing on the computer. And I do, you know, mild, like surfing on the web.
Generally speaking, pretty much anything will do that. You want at least 4 gigs of RAM, but better off to get 8, and if you can, 16, because that will take you more into the future. Dual-core processors are fine. Quad-core are better. So a lot of it depends on how often you want to replace it again. So if you get more of a computer now, then you don't have to replace it as soon.
Okay, when you say dual and quad, I have to say I'm not familiar. Like the i3, i5.
Yeah, each of those processor models, the i3, the i5, the i7, come in different configurations. So what happened is the chip companies couldn't make a processor any faster, so they put 2 processors in one die. And we call that a core. So the processor, a single i5 processor, can have 2 cores in it. So it acts like 2 processors.
Okay.
And then the more expensive ones have 4 processor cores, and we call that a quad core. And so it can go up from there. The more you want to spend, the faster it gets. But generally, you only need the super whiz bang stuff when you're doing video editing or 3D modeling. So even for home users, almost every chip you buy today is a dual core. So it's like having 2 processors. And for a little bit more, you can get a quad core model, which then runs even faster. So in essence, you're running your web browser, your mail program. Each gets its own processor core. And then you add a video player, it gets its own processor core if you have a 4-core model. So everything runs at full speed because it has its own core to play with.
Okay, when it comes to the hard drive, is 500 gig, 1 terabyte, is it
Well, what sort of stuff do you expect to save on it? If you do a lot of audio or video saving, then a terabyte is probably not nearly enough. If mostly what you do is write your own documents or store only a few pictures, certainly a terabyte is a huge drive, but it depends on how it depends on what you save.
Well, most of what I would be saving would be documents, but at some point, I hope to do something. I've got boxes of 35-millimeter slides, which I would like to get into, you know, digital form.
Yep, yep. That will certainly hold an awful lot of them, but at some point, you're going to want to take maybe some of them offline onto a DVD drive. Discs, you know, back them up onto that, or get yourself a multi-terabyte drive that you connect to your network or your computer itself.
Yeah. So in that case, I would say at least start with a 1 terabyte drive.
Right.
Okay. Let me just ask you this as a sort of quick follow up: is there sort of good usable scanning equipment available for me for scanning slides into the computer?
Generally, yes, and it usually comes with the scanner. There's a couple of different types of scanners you can get. Flatbed scanners are inexpensive, and they can also some of them you have to make sure you get the right model can also scan slides. Some of them can do one at a time. Some of them can do multiple slides at a time. Or you can get a dedicated slide scanner. They generally cost a little more, depending on how many slides you want to do at once. We're playing with someone in Second Life, Monique, I think it was, has a $99 one slide at a time scanner that works pretty neat if you only want to do one at a time.
Right. What you're trading off is your time and labor for money.
So if you get a $200 or $300 scanner, you could do 6 slides at a time, which is fairly common in the higher end scanners.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And then if you have a service do them, because my wife has been looking into this, to have a service do your slides, it's usually about $1 a piece.
Before we go on to the next caller, I had someone call in asking where they could find the Soundbite podcasts.
Oh, excellent question. We can do that now.
Yeah,
they're back. If you go to the main Soundbites page at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, and scroll down on the right-hand side under Fascinating Stuff, the very last link is the podcasts. And if you click on that, you will actually see that it's at soundbites.org/?feed=podcast, no spaces. And if you were to plug that into your podcasty stuff, you would get the podcasts loading up on your machine.
So that requires a podcasting app or podcatcher, they're sometimes called. iTunes for Mac and Windows will do podcasts. Gpodder, we talked about last week, also for Mac and Windows. Stitcher will do it. There's several different programs that will do podcasts. And the advantage of a podcast is it automatically downloads the new episodes every time they're released, so you don't have to go look for them. Also, under that Fascinating Stuff is a link that says the full audio archives. That will show you individual episodes that you manually download and listen to. So having a podcast feed is pretty handy because it can do the automatic downloading. And if you have a portable music player, that's also popular to have in the car, so that the feed then automatically downloads and you listen to it in the car.
There you go. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James.
Oh, thanks. Hey, when I do a Revo uninstaller, as it's going through the uninstaller, it asks you one question to delete stuff. Do you either delete just the things that are in bold or all of them? I don't know what that is, the registry or whatever.
Yeah.
Are you supposed to delete just the bold or everything?
Well, here's the problem.
You have to know.
Yeah, here's the problem with Revo is that you really have to know. There's no universal all of the bold or none of the bold or any of that
stuff. They usually have two or three things in bold, and it asks you, what am I supposed to do?
Right. Well, I would suggest that the best thing to do would be to quarantine them and see if there's any issues with that.
Uh-huh.
If there aren't, then you can delete them.
All right, so quarantine just sets them aside or whatever?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. One other question. You were talking about those podcasts. Is there a way to record, like, what's on the radio and then play it back on my laptop?
Yes. There are several programs that will do that. I'm assuming that you can get an audio stream.
Yeah, on the laptop.
Right.
Yeah, so what would I use to do that?
What operating system do you have?
Windows 7.
Okay, there's one. Oh, man.
Total Recorder?
Total Recorder, thank you.
Okay, Total Recorder.
Total Recorder. It used to be $15. It's probably $25 now.
For the year?
Yeah, forever.
Oh, forever. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I bought that many years ago when I was still using a Windows machine. Holy moly, it's terrific. I do it now with on my Linux box with built-in software.
And oftentimes that's not necessary anymore because most radio shows have an automatic podcast already pre-recorded for you to automatically download. So you may not have to record it yourself. You can go to their website and download their feed.
Right. Okay. Is this Joel or Joe?
Joel.
Joel from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joel. What's up?
Yes, hi, guys. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for what you do in helping people.
Oh, thank you.
25 years now, right?
25 years, amazing. A few months. There's a clock. Well, not really a clock since it's not real time, but there's a thing on the webpage in the upper right that says we've been on the air for 25 years, 4 months, and 28 days.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Nick, I've got a correction for you. In your column this week in the DNC, you referred a guy to the SeniorNet Learning Center at the JCC for help.
Yeah.
And I'm the coordinator of that program. For the last 8 years, we've been the Tech Age Adult Computer Learning Center at the JCC. And our website address is ROCTECHAGE.org. So if people have been looking for SeniorNet, they're not going to find us. But
where did I find SeniorNet? I actually, because I knew that name, I actually Googled SeniorNet. I said SeniorNet Rochester, New York, and it brought up a bunch of stuff. It brought up Tech Age of Rochester, New York, under rnyseniornet.org.
That's really strange.
I apologize for that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just want to apologize for getting that wrong.
Well, I appreciate your sending folks to us. We're an all-volunteer program, and we help people, you know, learn to use their computers and iPads.
Now, Don't go past that, Joel. I think that's important to let people know. There is a group in town called SeniorNet. We're called Tech Age Adult Learning Center. At ROCTECHAGE.org. Steve's going to put up a link that actually will help you, particularly those among you who are seniors, to get your machines up and running correctly. And I know we get a lot of calls from folks who are seniors and are at the moment a little bit swamped with what they've got in front of them. These folks will happily help you. So let's not let that slide by, Joel. Let's give credit where credit is due.
We offer classes for PCs, iPads, digital computers. We also have free open lab sessions, help sessions, Monday through Friday, noon to 2, where people can just drop in. So they don't need to be a JCC member. Just drop in to our Learning Center at the JCC. They can access the Internet. We have coaches there to help them, whatever they're trying to do.
Perfect.
And we were just joking with Irwin last week that you lowered the age to 45, was it?
The age is 45,
It's 45 now, so that's why they're not senior anymore.
Right.
That's why we call it adult.
Right. Excellent.
Yeah. But the one thing I wanted to tell you while I was waiting on the phone here, an email popped up, and it's from Amazon. Amazon Prime now offers unlimited ad-free music streaming.
Nice.
Yeah.
For Amazon Prime, which is like $100 a year. Although every now and then it goes on sale at the old price, which was $80 a year.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So again, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm going to check that out. We have Amazon Prime.
Yeah. You're welcome. Right. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Cool. How cool is that? Nice. All right. So those of you who are interested in learning more about your computers in a friendly, relaxed, no pressure environment, head out to Tech Age Adult Learning Center. In the meantime, we're going to Larry from Penfield. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have an Asus laptop, and I'm not a big fan of touchpads, so I've always turned mine off and used a USB mouse, which works just fine. Except that every now and then, somehow it gets set and it turns back on. And recently, that's been happening on a regular basis. It just turns itself back on. And the only way that I've found to be able to turn it off is with the function keys at the top.
Yep.
Except that that stopped working. So I looked all over the computer to see if there was something, some other way to control it, and I haven't been able to find anything. I did a search. The only thing I came up with was on the Asus support site. Somebody suggested, for a similar problem, downloading ATK hotkey drivers on the downloads page. So I tried that, but on the downloads page, they want you to put in your model or have it do it automatically or whatever. And no matter which method I try, it just doesn't do anything. It just sits there and spins. So I'm kind of stuck on how to get out of this thing.
Well, this is interesting because generally it's the other way around. They turn themselves off. And you're right, the Asus Smart Gesture program, which is part of the ETD Control Center. I don't know what ETD stands for. You should already have it installed.
I don't know how to access anything other than these function keys.
How old is the computer?
Pardon?
How old is the computer?
I think it's about 3 or 4 years. It's a K53E series.
It may be the CMOS battery weak, and then it dies and zeros the BIOS settings and sets everything back to the way you don't want it.
That's very possible. So there's a couple of things to try. First, the ETD Control Center is actually in the notification area, which is down at the bottom right. You may not see it all, but there should be an arrow that lets you say show icon and notifications. So once you get that icon, you should be able to see there one of them is mouse detection, one of them is disable touchpad, et cetera, et cetera. But Steve is right. What may well be happening with a four-year-old laptop, particularly if you turn it off regularly and don't have it plugged in all the time, is that the CMOS battery, the battery that keeps the CMOS running even when the machine is off, is so old that it's run out of battery. And what that means is that the setting that says, oh, you wanted the touchscreen off, has disappeared. And so it comes back on. The way to fix that is to replace the CMOS battery. Sadly, I can't tell you how to do that because I don't know where it is on that particular model. But you should be able to take it to a reputable dealer, whoever in town does. You know, I don't know where you bought it, but they should be able to replace that CMOS battery for you. Of course, they'll charge you for that.
Yeah, it is plugged in all the time, so if that makes a difference,
if it's turned off, it might not be. It depends again. Some laptops, the CMOS runs off the main laptop battery. Some, it has its own battery. And so, I can't tell you on that particular model which it was.
Mm-hmm. On this EDT control center, I have a little arrow here that pops up a bunch of things like speaker controls and printers and whatnot, but I don't see anything in there about the touchpad.
I don't know exactly where you're looking. There are there tabs across the top?
No, there's no tabs. There's just a bunch of icons.
I do not know. The one I see here, and I have an Asus laptop, and the one I have at home, there is a tab for it. And so maybe you have a much older version, and I don't know what to say about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it sounds like I might just have to take it back to the dealer.
I'm sorry, you might have to. Yeah. Have them take a look at it and get it set up. Or, of course, take it to TechAge. And let some of the geniuses there take a look at it as well.
They're not actually a repair center. They're
No. They're a learning center. They may help you find it, but if it needs a repair, you still got to take it somewhere else. All right, we got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 43 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at... Oh, that's interesting. And at 46 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Gerd from Victor, New York on the line. Welcome, Gerd. What's up?
Well, let's see. I have an HP Pavilion Chromebook that, when I first got it, was lightning fast. It has slowed down for all the, like, reading the emails, scrolling up and down, opening them up. Is there any way of dealing with whatever the problem is?
Wow. What?
Usually that means it's been loaded up with cruft, adware or spyware or something like that, but that's exceedingly difficult on a Chromebook.
Okay, let me ask you a couple of things. Have you added a bunch of stuff... add-ons or
extensions
or whatever they're calling them this week?
Probably, but I don't know if there is a bunch of it.
Well, let me suggest you add one more extension to your system.
Or look at all the extensions and remove the ones you know you're not using.
Well, there's an extension called Toggle Extensions On Off.
Cool.
And that it will sit in your taskbar, and it's a little power button. And when you hit it, all the extensions go off, all of them. Which means the ones you really want, like tabs to the front and blocking pop-ups and all of that stuff, those are off too. But that's not important right now because this is just for testing.
Toggle extension?
Yeah, there's one called Toggle Extensions On Off. It's actually called, let me bring up the... my extensions page here. Excuse me, I'm apparently choking to death.
How do I get to extensions?
Right here in the air. The menu thing, which is the three little bars in the upper right corner.
Yes.
Pull that down. Down the bottom is more tools, and under more tools, the top one is extensions.
Okay.
And the thing is called... I'm looking for it frantically as I, because this makes great radio. Let me tell you that right now.
Toggle
this
it.
Is the do, best do, radio do, there. Do, yeah, exactly. Wow. It's not listing itself here. That's really interesting. Okay.
I got them all right here.
All right, but there's one. Well, you would want to add this one. Okay. And the way you add them is to... Oh, there it is. And now they're all off, and now they're all my ones are back on again. What you want to do...
Disable all extensions plus?
Yeah, it could be called disable all extensions. I'm not seeing it on my list, and I don't know why. There it is. Disable extensions temporarily. That's what it's called. And what you do is you go down to the bottom of your page...
Yeah.
And hit the Get More Extensions link.
Yeah.
And then search for Disable Extensions Temporarily, and then add that, and then you can hit it, and it will indeed, well, disable all extensions temporarily.
Thank you.
And so if it then speeds back up again, it was because one of your extensions, one or more of your extensions, was eating all the horsepower.
Right.
Gotcha. I just want to tell you I'm also a paid-up member.
That's what we like to hear.
Love you.
Thank
guys.
You so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. That's what we love to hear. We, like I said, we are solely member supported. So if you don't play along, we could go away. That would be bad. That would be sad for us, but it could happen. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't hear any of that. Walter from Greece.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Welcome, Walter. What's up?
Hello, gentlemen. Question that maybe Steve can tell me. I'm trying to free up some space on my friend's 16 gigabit iPad. It puzzles me because when I get into the system and look at it, it's like the operating system is taking 10 gigabytes of the whole of the hard drive. I got 2 gigabytes of free, and with her other applications, maybe about another 1.5 gig. I dumped off a lot of pictures. I've shut down some things, told her to drop off like Facebook. That'll clear things up. But of course, every time you turn it on, it's going to come back. I'm caught. Like I said, I'm especially stunned that 10 gig, according to what it says, is the operating system. So what's going on?
It's probably not the operating system. That's usually only 1 or 2 gigs. If you go to Settings, General Usage, there is a section called Manage Storage.
Yeah.
And that will show you what programs are using how much storage.
Right. That's where we've been. And there's something, it's grayed out, says it's the operating area. Because, again, that one side says here's the operating. One side has the free space and tells you what the applications are and what each of them are taking.
Yeah, then you're not in the right place.
Then I'm not in the right place.
Settings, so, General Usage, you just get a list of all your apps.
Okay, so where do I go again?
Settings, General Usage.
Okay, that's where I go. Settings, General Usage.
And then Manage Storage.
Manage Storage.
And it shows you a list of all your applications sorted by what's taking up the most space.
Okay.
And what's the one at the top of the list?
Okay. All right.
Usually your photos that end up taking a lot of space, but sometimes if you have, you know, dozens of little programs, they can take up more space than one big program.
Okay. All right. I'll see what's in there then, because as I said, I took away a lot of photos and cleared up a lot of stuff.
Sometimes you have to reboot after deleting stuff so that it basically clears out and knows that you've deleted it.
Okay. I'll see if she's been doing that then. And
are seeing that 16 gigs isn't enough for most people. It's the least expensive model, but it's not enough.
That's what I've said to her. I think it may be time to graduate upward if you're going to be taking pictures and doing whatever.
Yeah.
I ask you one quick question then?
Mm-hmm.
She also has a subscription to iCloud. Does that do anything of coming back, dumping things back onto her iPad?
In general, iCloud is free.
She's got the 99 cents month one.
You get 5 gigabytes of free space for backing up your iPad to the cloud,
right?
And for saving documents in the cloud,
right?
And so if 5 gigabytes isn't enough, you can buy more storage.
Yeah.
So that's offline. Well, not offline, but off your iPad storage of documents and backup.
Yeah.
So you can choose to bring those files back if you need to restore your iPad.
Okay. So it doesn't sync. And what I'm getting at is not syncing, like it's feeding. She put things out there. It isn't feeding back onto our iPad at all.
Well, that's different. iCloud syncing is a different part of iCloud. And iCloud syncing is generally your contacts and calendars and very small things that sync back to the iCloud, from iCloud back to the iPad.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Sure.
I will work on that then. Thank you very much, Steve.
Yeah. You can get an external wireless hard drive, because there's no wires on the iPad, to store photos and video on if you run out of your storage space on your device itself. But then that's another box you have to carry.
Right.
Although it is interesting, most of the drives, there's the G-Tech G-Connect and the LaCie Fuel, they will support multiple simultaneous streaming. So the family car ride, each of the 3 kids in the back seat can be watching a different movie coming off of this one external hard drive.
Nothing wrong with that. All right. That music tells me that we are at the end of another week of Soundbites. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to all of those to whom we did not get. Please call earlier and more often next week, Chicago-style calling. Please join us tomorrow night in Second Life. Ask for me, Neil Infinity, N-I-H-I-L, Nihil Infinity, and I can give you a teleport to where we're going to be. Don't go away, though. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is stuck here with... I mean, Michael will be here with him for the next 2.5 hours, and he's delighted about it. And we'll be back next week, 166 hours from now, with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. For Steve Ray and Michael Oden, I'm Nick Francesco on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week. Thanks for listening.